Next, on to the Ambassador Award, which will be presented to Art Podell. The presenter will be Tracy Newman. She's a Far West regular, TV writer, producer, songwriter, really good friend of Art and Far West. Please welcome Tracy Newman. I have a little surprise, which I'm just going to read before Tracy starts. And these are two touching testimonials that we received for Art. The first one is from Peter Yarrow, and it was his quote about the Art and Paul reissue, and it goes as following. The music on these albums, with their extraordinarily beautiful harmonies, which we heard Art and Paul sing in the Greenwich Village coffee houses, both informed and inspired Peter, Paul, and Mary. Though they preceded our appearance on the scene by only a year or so, their music had a profound influence on us and many others and helped pave the way for contemporary folk music to add great richness to the landscape of American music. When you listen, you're listening to history and an important part of the birth of the 1960s folk renaissance that evolved to become one of the most creative musical eras ever in America. And next, a wonderful testimonial from Noel Stuckey. Art and Paul, Greenwich Village folk stalwarts at the Café Wa, Podell and Podash were their last names, I came to find out eventually, but it was their musicianship, sensitivity to and affection for folk music that identified them to me. Years before Dickie and Tommy Smothers created an art form from their comedic misinterpretation of folk music, Art and Paul were demonstrating their admirable quality and ability to create laughable characters within the framework of tunes like Hole in the Bucket and simultaneously maintain their credibility through an impressive repertoire of serious folk ballads. All of this while maintaining great rapport with an often skeptical off-the-street audience. It is a memorable and valuable part of my performing history to have shared the stage with them in those early days of the folk music revival. And here's Tracy.
Well, well, and you're all eating. It's great. Never go up on stage after you've eaten a salad. Okay, if you had told me in 1961 that I was going to be introducing Art Podell at anything, or that I would still be alive, actually. Anyway, thank you. It's really an honor to introduce my good friend Art Podell as the 2019 recipient of the Best of the West Award. I'm starting with a quote from Mason Williams. I know you're kind of quoted out, but here it comes anyway. I first played the Troubadour in 1961. I saw the greats there. Budden Travis, Josh White, Nina Simone, and Art and Paul were part of that great experience. I used to keep tabs on who was playing at the Troubadour, and if it was Art and Paul, I'd buy a ticket. I made up a song about them based on the tune Heart and Soul, which went, and you should join me. Art and Paul, I fell in love with you, Art and Paul. Okay, that's enough. Mason was really a musician, not really a lyricist, as I know, anyway. Anyway, he also said, and reinforcing their star status, a young David Crosby used to meet them at the airport at their plane, remember when you could do that, and offer to carry Art's guitar. Well, I started with that quote because it mirrors my experience of the first time I saw Art and Paul. I was 18, it was 1961. I had been playing guitar for 4 years, and I went to the Troubadour and fell in love, pretty literally. You know, I was a girl and I was 18. And, you know, Art was, and still is, really, a smart, witty, charming performer, guitarist, arranger, and Paul Podash was, So versatile, a fluid actor with a deep, seductive voice, and he was really a crooner. I really had a big crush on Art, you might be able to tell. I mean, on Paul. My friend Kathy had a crush on Art. We've talked about this, you know. You're okay about this, okay. The thing about them is that they were funny, and their approach was theatrical, and they were actually entertaining. In fact, they were too entertaining for the Ashgrove. The Ashgrove wouldn't use them because they were too commercial, because they were entertaining. And by the way, by the time they got to L.A. and started at the Troubadour, they had already had a Columbia record deal, done two albums, and lost their record deal, which is what happens to everybody. I don't even know why that happened, so maybe Art will fill us in on something about that. Another bit of trivia, Steve mentioned Simon and Garfunkel. The reason they're not called Art and Paul, Simon and Garfunkel, is because when they signed their Columbia record deal, which was in 1963, Columbia Records already had an Art and Paul. Isn't that nice to know? Anyway, they in 1961, they came to L.A., and Doug Weston, you know who Doug Weston is? Remember the owner of the Troubadour? Well, he had a club on La Cienega when he started, and he moved to the Santa Monica location, and he was broke, entirely broke, and needed an act to come in that was great, that would draw people, and who would work for free. And Art and Paul had just hit town. They were broke, and they needed room and board and a showcase. So it was a marriage of convenience. And so they played for 14 straight weeks, and they lived upstairs, and they ate there. And it went from no audience to standing room only. I was there, so I watched it happen. And they really kind of saved the Troubadour, because I don't know if he could have stayed open without that. So at the time, I was in a short-lived duo with Barry McGuire. And we were barely guitar players. And we saw Art and Paul, and we just started ripping off the arrangements. And we were playing at a Mexican restaurant in Westwood Village, and we were doing Wobak Buck, which exactly their arrangement. We didn't think about it. You know, it wasn't like we were stealing, was it? Anyway, this is what Barry McGuire says about Art. I was insanely jealous of Paul's singing voice and Artie's incredible ability on guitar. We became friends and over the next 5 years performed hundreds of shows together with the New Christy Minstrels. Artie has always been a phenomenal lyricist and magical songwriter. He has that New York, Brooklyn sense of humor that never fails to keep me guessing. Congratulations, Art, this one's for you. I'll tell him that you applauded that. For some reason, soon after their long Troubadour run, Art and Paul stopped working together. As Art says, we were so successful, we broke up. Which is another thing that used to happen all the time. I mean, I don't know why. So maybe you'll talk about that a little bit, too. Anyway, when that happened, Art turned to songwriting. And if you look up on YouTube, you can find songs written by Art Padel, done by Rod McEwen and written with Rod McEwen, the Smothers Brothers, Glenn Yarborough, Joe and Eddie, Bud and Travis, and eventually, of course, the New Christy Minstrels. He was a minstrel from the 62 to 66, and you could say that his career took quite a ride from the Troubadour to Carnegie Hall in less than 6 months. National TV, college concerts, European tours, and performances at the White House. Another story I would like you to tell, maybe not in this venue because it's a little bit non-PC, but in your panel right after this. Believe me, it's worth going to the panel or whatever it's called, workshop. It's worth just to hear his playing at the White House for the LBJ White House. All right, so when the Beatles hit town or hit the country or whatever, folk music stopped being a way to make a good living. So Art became a Mercedes-Benz dealer. And he started, let's see, where is that? He actually, I know. He actually spent an evening, by the way, with Paul McCartney. I mean, these are things you never hear. I'm just finding this out. I've known Art for God knows how many years. And he spent an evening hanging around with Paul McCartney doing, I'm sure, a few things. And and there's a photo, if you go to Facebook, there's a photo of the Christy Minstrels, some of them, with the Beatles that Art has had all these years, and he just posted it. If I had that picture, I don't know if you've seen me on Facebook, but if you go to my thing, it's like I've got everything up there that I've ever done in my life. All right, so he took a break from folk music, and in fact, he didn't come back for 45 years. How many people did that, by the way? Quit folk music to make a living and then came back? I did. Anybody else? Yeah, I have the feeling it's fairly common, however, not in this room. Unless you're eating and you don't want to raise your hand. So he returned to folk music with a vengeance, writing songs for himself to perform. And now he's doing concerts, you know, house concerts, and all sorts of venues, not only in Los Angeles, but in Arizona and probably other places too. And I turned him on to Harriet Schock's songwriting class, which I don't know if any of you know that class. It's pretty great, yeah. And he wrote a song called And Then You Smile, which is about his wife, Judy. Beautiful song, and which brings us to his first solo album called From the Village to the Canyon, A Songwriter's Journey. Yes, it's. I don't know if you have it, but you should get it. It was recently part of an exhibit at the Grammy Museum in L.A., featuring the music of Laurel Canyon. In fact, the theme song of the exhibit was your song, right? Was it Golden Apples, or was it We Sang Our Songs in California, or both of them? Yeah, We Sang Our Songs in California. And that CD and a lot of Art's more current songs have been dominating the Roots. I don't know if you know the Roots Music Report. You know, a lot of us have our songs on there, and it kind of rankles me, frankly, that Art's been in the number one spot for I don't know how many months. And, you know, I've got some songs out there. So, you know, it's a little frustrating for all of us. But anyway, he's way up there in the Roots charts. And he also has a KPFK show. How many people knew that? Called Roots Music and Beyond. He plays old favorites, and he also plays recordings by a lot of his talented, lesser-known folk singer friends like Chauncey Bowers, Cynthia Carl, Bill Berry, Marty Axelrod, Sean Cromwell, Robert Morgan Fisher, and yours truly, to name a few. And, I mean, right there, as far as I'm concerned, he deserves the best of the West just for doing that. So, yeah. So, I'm closing, don't worry. I love the guy, and I loved Art and Paul, and I love the current the version of Art as a performer. And doing shows with him, we really have a good time. And I got some quotes from, I got a quote from Van Dyke Parks. I can't read all of it, because if you know Van Dyke, I don't know what state he was in when he wrote this, okay? However, the end of his quote is very eloquent, so I'm going to say that. Yet it's Art Bedell of the present tense that astonishes. By being more interested in others than in attempting to be interesting, Art is a rarity. He has become every bit as much and more in the present tense through his encouragement of others' songsmithing in serving up a folk music menu on FM radio. He has defiantly kept our musical lore, American lore, on the front page above the fold. Here's a salute to Art for reminding us what really makes us tick. I'm really just beyond words. Now, I was going to end with that and say I am too, but I got a quote. Oh, I didn't even mention that the Art and Paul, the Sony release. Are you going to talk about that? Well, Art and Paul, the albums, the two albums they made in 1961, Sony just reissued those digitally. If you've never heard them, at least go listen to them. I mean, they're brilliant. And I was going to end with that, but I got a quote from Bob Stain, who received this award or the other one last year or the year before. He owns the Coffee Gallery, for those of you who don't know. He says, Art Padel has been a leader in the folk music industry since the late 50s. This award is richly deserved, and we should all take pride in his service to quality music. He is historical. He is not only historical, but he is still alive. Which is why I'm able to say, ladies and gentlemen, here is your 2019 Best of the West recipient, Art Padel, my friend.
It's all written down what I'm going to say, so if I try to sound extemporaneous, you know. By the way, Paul and I broke up. I wasn't going to mention this. Our albums weren't selling. Nobody knew what to do with us. I mean, folk singers loved us. Musicians loved us. I mean, Tim Hauser, who eventually became the leader of Manhattan Transfer, was there at the Cafe Y every night taking notes on our complicated arrangements. Columbia decided to hire two guys to write a hit song for us, and they brought us up to their apartment, and they said, this is what we've written for Art and Paul. And the guy sat there on the piano and played this song for us, and Paul and I looked at each other and said, this isn't folky enough. That's not us. This is, you know, something else. So we passed on it, and Columbia said, well, if that's the way it's going to go, you know, we're just not going to record anymore. It was some song, I don't know, something called Sealed with a Kiss or something. I don't know if it ever got anywhere. Kate, I'm your opening act. My ex-bandmate Randy Spark defined an opening act as somebody who comes out and takes up some time and leaves you wanting, and I think I can accomplish that. The late great actress Ruth Gordon, you remember her from the movie classic Harold and Maude. At the graceful age of 73, after having appeared in countless motion pictures, received her first Oscar ever for Best Supporting Actress in the movie Rosemary's Baby. Climbing to the podium, Ruth pressed the golden statuette to her heart, and I humbly repeat her memorable words. I can't tell you how encouraging this is. When I was informed that I was to receive a Lifetime Achievement Award today, for some reason, my first instinct was to write a eulogy. Like many of you, I'm a songwriter, so you know I would never leave that job to anyone else. I won't burden you with too much history during this 15 minutes of fame speech. That's for later. For those of you who are interested, I'll be hosting a casual get-together at 2:15 if we make it. I'll sing a few songs that struck me as a youth and still thrill me, perhaps a new song or two, perhaps tell a story or two, and maybe try some new ideas out on you that I'd like to try out, and answer any questions as long as they don't begin with, why didn't you? If you'd like to be there, I'd love to join you. I don't know what I can tell you about myself, except that I was always happiest when I could feel calluses on the fingers of my left hand. You guitar players out there know what I mean. When I first fell in love with folk songs, no one who was serious about making money with music would go anywhere near Greensleeves or Take This Hammer. It was the age of doo-wop, big bands, and dance party, but we didn't care. Any coffee shop with a wheezing espresso machine was Carnegie Hall, a place to sit on Sunday in Washington Square was the Metropolitan. We drenched ourselves in the music of Appalachia's mountain hollows, the western plains, and the humid bayous of the South. We brought their songs to the cities, shaping them as our imaginations would allow, sharing them with whomever would listen, and sure enough, people started paying money to listen. Could have knocked me over with a finger pick. When I began this incredible journey, I recognized a few important things. I was neither Pete Seeger nor Frank Sinatra. I wasn't even close to sounding like the blues guys or the bluegrass whiz kids. You know who they are. I had a pleasant enough voice, and my classical guitar studies had made me a decent folk guitarist. But I couldn't find anything in my style that was like those folk singers I admired so much. My childhood friend and eventual musical partner, Paul Potash, had a deep Broadway baritone and a flair for slapstick comedy. We even had made a few bucks in high school at parties, mimicking Martin and Lewis between my folk songs. So how'd we do what we did back then that suddenly has taken on a new life with a re-release from Sony? We sat nose to nose in a cheap one-bedroom walk-up on the Lower East Side of Manhattan month after month, surviving on oatmeal and peanut butter sandwiches, crafting arrangements. We weren't geniuses. All we had to offer was what we had. And once we wore through the posing and trying to sound like everybody else, all we were left with was us. I hope that everybody's path here leads you to what we discovered in that walk-up. It's worth the trip. Believe me. Okay, onward. Okay. I just turned 83. Yeah, I've been on primetime television. I've had a series, played Sung with Legends, rode high on the Billboard charts. I've produced chart albums. Yeah, yada, yada. Got a Grammy statuette, God knows where. I've sung at the White House for the president, Carnegie Hall. I've had my share of lonely nights singing for my dog. Yet I'm constantly aware that I'm here because I stand on the shoulders of the wonderful performers, mentors, and teachers who inspired me. Not to honor that legacy would be misrepresenting myself. I can't address the older folks here because I'm one of you and you're me. We've been in the fire. But to the younger members here today, you've made an investment coming here, time, money, and sacrifice, and you're entitled to leave with something of value. Be proud that you too stand on the shoulders of so many who have come before you so that your voices may be heard. For you songwriters, I'm here to tell you this, that regardless of the successes I've had, large and small, each time I sit down to write a song, the same tall mountain rises before me, and I'm convinced that the well is finally empty and there are no more songs. But have faith, because as sure as God made little green apples, sooner or later, a song's going to take form and explode in your heart like a missile and inspire you to continue climbing. So good luck in the things that matter here. We're all brothers and sisters at the end of it. So there, that's my speech. This is encouraging. tell you what, you've given me so much encouragement. I'm going to give this folk music thing another couple of years, and if it works out, I just may make a commitment to this, you know. Do you mind if I sing you a song? I wrote this song some years ago with a friend who's no longer here, one of my new Christy Mitchell bandmates, Barry Kane. It's kind of a tribute to you. It's a tribute to the magical, musical muse that lurks in all of us and peeks out of the darkness when we least expect it. Sometimes I hear it in the strangest places, and I wonder where it's been. And in the time between the time, I see a shadow move while the music fades out and in. And sometimes I wake up in the strangest places, and I wonder where I've been. And in the time between the time, between the time, between the time, the gypsy sings again. The pearl that sleeps beneath the sea, flame that burns inside the heart, that's what you are. I turn around and you were gone. I did without you for so long. I long to hear the gypsy's song. Golden apples of the sun, the light that lives inside a star, that's what you are. I turn around and you are gone. I did without you for so long. I long to hear the gypsy's song. And sometimes I wake up in the strangest places, and I wonder where I've been. And in the time between the time, between the time, between the time, the gypsy sings again. Thanks so much.